Hello and welcome back to the Appliance Retailer Podcast. I'm Seamus Byrne. It has only been a couple of weeks. I'm sure that's all we've been away for. And joining me here on the podcast this time around is the publisher of Appliance Retailer, James Wells. James, how you been?
Hey, Seamus. Yeah, this is the first one for this year. Very excited to kick it off.
Excellent. And of course, we're always joined by very cool people from around the industry. So who have we got with us this time?
We have Kurt Hegvold from Electrolux. Kurt is the Managing Director of Australia and New Zealand. Kurt, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, James. Thank you, Seamus. Lovely to be here with you today.
Excellent.
Kurt, we're going to talk about a couple of things today, but where I think one of Electrolux's strengths is in the sustainability space. We have the sustainability report for Appliance Retailer coming up. So I just wanted to start with a few key sustainability initiatives and targets that Electrolux might have for 2025. Would you be able to share maybe a couple of those with us today?
Yeah, I'd love to. It's certainly a topic and a space within the industry that I'm passionate about and that our organization is passionate about. And the great thing about it is we certainly don't stand alone in that. We have many peer companies that are very focused on important initiatives, not only domestically, but globally. We look at the likes of Beko, Samsung, Miele, F&P. They're all really committed to this from a supplier standpoint, and of course our retail partners likewise very committed to finding solutions within our industry. But look, Electrolux has been at this for a long time. In fact, long before it was a requirement to put out sustainability reports, Electrolux was putting out sustainability reports. So well over nearly 40 years ago now, they were putting their sustainability reports to market. And I think globally, the Electrolux group has been very committed to this sort of purpose that we house most of our missions and visions around, which is shaping living for the better. And domestically, we've been doing that for over 100 years here in Australia, globally coming up to 120 years. For the business. And it's become part of a really important sustainability journey. Our business strives to create better and more sustainable living for people around the world through our sustainability framework, which is titled For the Better 2030. And naturally, that focuses on our SBTs, our science-based targets, as well as our SDGs and what we're trying to achieve as an organization. And we've broken that framework into three areas. That's a better company, better solutions, better living. Obviously, better company is how we always try to achieve resource-efficient operations, driving safe, diverse, and ethical company operations, and make sure we're driving value through the supply chain that delivers better overall sustainability footprints. Better solutions, and that might be around, of course, our core product and how we're trying to meet the ongoing demand for lighter impact appliances that continuously optimize their performance while never taking away from consumer experience and doing what the product needs to do, but making sure that we continue to have products that are always creating either a lighter touch in the use of the product or a lighter touch in the end use of the product. And that's looking at the type of materials we use, more materials that can be recycled. And then finally, that better living is more around the human behavior element. You know, it's around how our products can drive better eating habits and longer lasting management of food, better garment care, less water, longer lasting, better home environments that we can partner with consumers and retailers alike. Now, as a business, we obviously have our 2030 goals and our 2050 goals across our Scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions. Amazingly, Electrolux actually exceeded its 2025 Scope 1, 2 goals back in 2023. So we went back to UN. We actually put forward a new range of expanded science-based targets for 21 through 2030. And that sees us by 2030 having 85% of all Scope 1, 2 emissions removed from our business. And then across Scope 3, which I think we're certainly exploring Scope 3. It's a really difficult space to play in at the moment, but at least looking at a 50% reduction by 2030, which gets us well on our way to net zero by 2050. And I think in that space of Scope 3, and we can talk a bit more about that down the line, but this is a really challenging and complex task when we talk about data quality and data availability. There's low accuracy and very diverse sources, and there's complex supply chains and multi-tiered global supply chains. calculating indirect emissions and how you do the attribution of those things, many other ways in which it's complicated. And I think this is going to be more and more a focus for our business globally and all businesses, because it's going to become essentially a legal requirement from a director to sign off annually on the company's sustainability report. And naturally, Australia is about to move to regulated reporting, sustainability reporting for companies over $50 million. And as a company director, you'll be responsible for signing off on that. Now, at the moment, Scope 3 is not really mandated, regulated requirements, but it will be soon, has to be, if we're going to hit our 2030 targets. So that's really top of mind, I think, for myself and many of us in the industry. But primarily, we are phasing out our global warming gases. So 97% of all refrigerants are now gone. 60% of our operations energy is renewable globally. Within Australia, we're closer to 80% here. And we've put a lot of local initiatives in place, as you know, James, with our new facilities in Melbourne and Brisbane, which are 6-star energy rated renewably based facilities. Adelaide is 100% zero waste to landfill. It is running on pure renewables. And then further up the chain, we're actually now at a point where we're getting around 96%, 97% of all materials recycled on every site across the business, working with Waste Pro, our partner. So we've got some good initiatives. We've got a long way to go, and we've still got many areas of all scope 1, 2, and 3 we want to tackle, and a lot we want to do around product and packaging stewardship on a domestic front. That's also a really tricky thing to navigate. But I think we are steadily making progress against our ambitions, and in fact, against some of those very broad and scaled ambitions around our SDGs, we're actually ahead of our targets at this point in time. But you never know, there's a lot of geopolitical movements at the moment and a lot of challenges and changes happening. I only hope that those targets become more stringent rather than looser. We'll have to see what our friends in certain parts of the world have in mind for us. Long answer to a short question, but yeah, we got lots on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think time will tell, obviously, with the geopolitical situation. But I think that you obviously got the initiatives in place to position the company moving forward. And I think that's the most important thing. Now, from a retailer's perspective, taking all of that information, what does this mean to a retail salesperson on the floor that is communicating with a consumer? There's obviously a lot of initiatives there. But from a retailer's perspective, when they've got a customer standing in front of an Electrolux machine and they're wanting to purchase a product, what are the sort of ways that can manifest itself for retailers on the floor?
Yeah. So let me look at this in three different ways. One would be what it means to retailers and suppliers today to try and create consumer-centric, forward-facing messages and how challenging that can be. The second is for the team members on the floor, there is a corporate message and then there is a product message. And I think we'll talk to those three things somewhat separately. It's actually really difficult regulatory and legal environment to navigate through. We hear about greenwashing, and I actually think the retailers and suppliers, of course, need to be balanced, but the intention is really positive. I don't think people are trying to inadvertently commercially capitalize. I think we're just trying to find the right way to make sure people understand there are savings to be made and there are efficiencies to be driven across energy consumption, water usage, residual waste, downstream waste, whether that be microplastics or whether that be excess detergent use in the waters or all of the byproducts of what our consumer products actually produce. But realistically, we're seeing a reservation to go down this path because being ambiguous or being misleading unintentionally in any way leads to some pretty significant impacts. And that's why we're really reluctant to take those messages on a broader level. So we need to come together as an industry and work out how we create more consistent and acceptable communications and claims. We need a robust, clear, and consistent system of measurements where consumers can look across a range of products, across a range of different product modalities, and be consistently clear what is it that I'm looking at that gives me an indication of energy consumption, water utilization. And we obviously have our star ratings. That's different between air care products, that's different between heating products, that's different between dishwashing and laundry products. And then we don't really have anything in the space of cooking that's consistent. So getting on top of that and finding a way to make it very consumer friendly and easy to use, whether that be around dollars saved, which is of course very important at the moment, or whether that be around consumption, I think that's a really important part of what we need to do collectively to help these individuals in the store. For our business, what I hope a person on the shop floor can communicate is that when you're buying an Electrolux product, you're buying a product from a company that has earned the right to be trusted in this space. The independent recognition, the open and transparent way in which we showcase our supply chains, showcase our products, showcase our actions at a local and global level, and the independent recognition of that, hopefully give those individuals comfort that they can say, if you're looking for a reputable company that definitely takes a sustainable stance, seriously, this is a group of brands that you can trust. When we actually get to the product, what we tend to do is invest a lot of time through our trade operations and trade marketing teams to educate the sales team in the store around those features and benefits. And what we're really focused on, of course, is ensuring that we never put sustainability in front of the consumer as a barrier to quality or experience. Those things have to come hand in hand. And in fact, we prefer to talk about the great experiences you're going to have with our product, the effectiveness of our product. By the way, you can also count on it being the most sustainable product in terms of energy consumption. So it's accessing sustainability with no trade-offs is where we want to sit with our consumers. And when it comes to our retail partners, we really want to be their partner of choice to grow. And so sustainability has to be very much part of what we take to market. Where the rubber hits the road in the store, even before they get into the features and benefits of our products, we want those in-store team members to say, this is a trusted company. We've seen them demonstrate that. And then when it comes to our products, we, of course, want them to speak to the benefits of our new and upcoming range and why it can be used more effectively. And that's, I think, one more step in the education piece is so many of our products can be used in a really sustainable way. We have our new range, James, as you know, of clothes dryers and washers coming up in our laundry care department. But those new products are able to perform very effectively. So we can do a full load wash in under 40 minutes at 30 degrees. So you're talking about a significantly lower amount of water used. You're talking about a convenience in time, and you're talking about less detergent being used on the clothes and washing at a lower temperature, which also prolongs the life of the clothes. So we need to make sure that, again, we put those messages into really easy digestible chunks that a person on the store can quickly reference, and making sure that consumers understand that it's actually a proactive requirement to get that. Because unfortunately, they walk away going, oh, if I just press this button, I get my 5-star energy rating. And it's no, you get the 5-star energy rating when you use these set of combined features. You can go all the way from quite inefficient washes to very efficient washes, but you need to know what to do. And that probably brings me to my last point, which is if you go onto the Electrolux website, there's information around our products, the way we focus on sustainability, what we like to bring to the party. If you look at our retail partners, it's a bit hit and miss in terms of what's available. Some have more detail around their commitments to sustainability. Others have less information, but none of them have combined information across supplier and retailer around collective initiative on things like how to use the product effectively. How do you make this product more sustainable through usage, and what can you do with the product at the end of life, and things that we could be doing collectively to better communicate the opportunity for consumers to operate the product more sustainably or manage the end of life product more sustainably. Those things are ways in which we could probably partner to communicate more effectively, and we will get there, but for the time being, it's still quite nascent in terms of how we as an industry tackle these things.
Matt, there's a group that's been created called COFOS, and I know you're one of the driving forces of COFOS and you've been on board from the very beginning. This is a group that's supposed to be pulling together these types of initiatives. For those listening who aren't aware of what COFOS is and what it does and what types of initiatives it's seeking to develop. Could you just maybe take a little bit of a step back in history and then provide us with a bit of an update as to where COFOS is in 2025?
Yeah. Obviously, James, I came from outside industry to inside industry, and in my prior life, I worked in the fast-moving consumers sector, and I worked with an organization called the Australian Food and Grocery Council, and we did quite a lot of work in the space of sustainability, particularly around soft plastics and what we could do to find common solutions. And when I came into this industry, it was clear that everyone had real intent, but everyone was tackling it in different ways. And what I could see coming at us was a raft of regulation, a lot of which had landed in other marketplaces. In Canada, in Quebec, we saw the plastics and the molded EPS, which is obviously the polystyrene packaging, all being regulated. France was regulating. The UK put in a very austere plastic tax. And a lot of that was hitting our industry in those markets. And as we were tackling it each in different ways, it struck me that if we pooled our resources and created scale, we could have a more constructive voice with government, with regulators, with third parties and non-for-profits that operate in this space, and maybe have a more integral part to play in the decision-making processes. In other words, getting to a point of co-regulation and having our industry more informed. And of course, that was designed to make sure we could make bigger steps. But the other part of what ended up becoming COFOS was that we wanted all ships to rise, because it's one thing for a multi-billion dollar global organization like Electrolux to have a good eye on the ball when it comes to sustainability. If you're a smaller local organization, you probably don't have the means to see what's coming down the pipe, and regulation can hit hard and fast. And what you could end up with is a less diverse industry where consolidation happens as a result of organizations just not being able to acclimate fast enough to the changing regulation. So I was having conversations with the NADA team, with Darren and with Michael, and we talked a lot about this, and I actually presented to their board at the time, and we realized it was an opportunity at their annual conference to take this topic and really put it to the broader audience of our industry. And from that was born this idea of how do we bring together industry expertise. And so that ultimately became the Coalition for Sustainable Solutions, or COFOS, which is now a representative body across suppliers and retailers. And we've got really good representation. In fact, on both supply and retail, we've probably got around 70% of all volume moving through the industry represented now. And the idea was that COFOS exists to establish and maintain a sort of circular solution for the supply of consumer electronics. It's part of its vision and purpose. COFOS seeks to reduce the impact of consumer electronics through its lifetime, from the undertaking of repair, resale, repurposing, recycling, and doing that in conjunction with the collection of end-of-life product, packaging materials, and finding ways to transform that back into raw materials for downstream reuse. And not only that, but we want to work with the downstream waste providers as well as find them an ongoing source of demand. And so through the coalition, we'll be a representative board to try and influence and collaborate with the business sector and across the government, private sector, non-government organizations to achieve those sustainability goals. So businesses like APCO, CESA, ARA, local government, federal government, we've started to connect with those organizations. And while as a group, we would still define ourselves as formative, we've got some burning platforms such as the phase out of molded EPS and what we need to do there. The battery recycling scheme is a hot topic for us at the moment. We're obviously looking at waste stream flow through our industry, because when government regulates on these things, they tend to use import data and then extrapolate, which leaves our industry, I think, a little bit vulnerable to misinterpretation. And if you actually look at a company like ours on a product like EPS, when it comes to large form packaging within our product, as we remove that product and send it to our retail partners or to our consumers, we're recycling 100% of all the EPS that comes through our site. We recycle it, we on-sell it, or we recycle it and we reuse it. And the same in our Dudley Park facility. We recycle, we make it on site, and then we send it to recycle and we buy it back off them. Now, in government assessment, a lot of that goes missing. A lot of that intel goes missing. And so what we wanted to do initially was, one, tackle a couple of burning platforms and point our resources towards that. And two was to get a much better handle on our baseline as an industry in terms of the waste flow of materials and product for both stewarding, product and packaging stewardship reasons. And so we're currently partnering with APCO to do a baseline study of waste flow through our industry. But what we would say right now, and Alice Cooper, who's our GM, and many of the board members who are super active, would say we're formative. We're still trying to wrap our arms around what we can do within our current constraints and resources. Alice and I always joke that the minute you have a meeting, you have 10 phone calls and 6 other meetings, and it just expands exponentially so quickly because there is so much opportunity and there is so much interest, particularly from government, around surfacing accurate information, because so much of what they do is more speculative.
What can we look forward to, Kurt, for COFOS in 2025?
Yeah, so at this very point in time, myself, Alice Cooper from Winnings, our GM, who dedicates a lot of her time to the cause, and many of our board members, we're interviewing them and they're interviewing us, and we're having a range of conversations around what are the topics of most importance right now, what are the current and what is emerging. So a great topic that we're discussing at the moment of emerging challenges is Scope 3 emission regulation and management, or is the eco-modulated tariffs that are coming down the line and how we integrate those across other existing taxes and or tariffs. But for 2025, we're going to get a good understanding of what the priorities are. We're then going to take those, form that into our mission, go out and actually build a stronger membership base. So right now, we're a non-for-profit. We're maintained purely by our members investing into the services that we provide. So making sure we have that right service model and the right value addition to those members, and continuing to really build out our network so we can expand what we are and what we are and what we stand for. And then that body of research we're doing around our baseline study is going to be really important, because that then gives us some credentialed information, which will be very much an aggregated body of data, so that it remains very confidential in terms of who's had input into it. But that aggregated data is something we can then shop around to different parts of government and regulatory to say, here's some really important data that you don't have, and we've partnered with APCO to build the rest of the data. We now have a really good understanding of our waste stream. Let's get a seat at the table and let's start talking about co-regulation. Because we found that government, by moving fast and maybe by not having the right consultation, has ended up regulating against initiatives that haven't delivered what everyone has the ambition for them to deliver. And I think, James, we've talked about molded EPS and group two, which is under 45 kg products in molded EPS packaging. The intent was to phase that out, and WA was the leading state, which is often a challenge. And by middle of this year, they wanted to really see the phasing out of scale molded EPS. And everyone struggled with this, both as a timeline and as a reality. A lot of the alternate substrates, which are still being experimented with, are often far more resource intensive than using EPS. And that's both in their creation and in their recycling or disposal. And so we're creating another problem. And also the damages that would be caused by removing that substrate without finding that right alternative would almost outweigh the benefits of removing the EPS. You're creating one significant problem while potentially solving another. So the optimal approach, I think, is with the data we have, would be to demonstrate there is actually an enormous amount of packaging stewardship already happening. Let's build scale around the waste collection. Let's build scale around the contributors to that, so we have a sustainable waste partner and waste solution. Let's find downstream demand we can create for that byproduct, create a circular solution, and move to a stewardship program. In the end, what happened was government allowed companies to self-regulate against fragile classification, which 99% of companies either did or will do. And under a fragile classification, you don't have to remove the EPS.
So effectively a sticker. So what you're saying is a fragile sticker can avoid certain regulations.
Yes, and in fact, you don't even need that. You just need to have a register. You have your product registered, and that means if it's registered fragile through your own tests on drop tests, and once you classify it and register it, the EPS remains. Now, what that still doesn't do is solve for a stewardship program, which, again, COFOS is very focused on playing a significant role in getting a robust, sustainable and collective and collaborative stewardship program around EPS, which we think could be really impactful. And that's that for COFOS, I think it's, we're really going to establish our value proposition and the product that we're bringing to memberships, so members really want to be part of it. We've got, as a burning platform, EPS. We're looking at battery stewardship. Of course, this year we are going to see the mandatory reporting for businesses over $50 million on sustainability initiatives, and that means tracking all your emissions and tracking all your initiatives. There's a lot of businesses, James, as you know, in our industry that probably don't have that at the forefront of their business skill set. So what we're going to try and do is work with who are the agencies that we can pull together and go back and recommend to our members, say, these individuals, these companies can really help you achieve that ambition of putting forward the right reporting and removing any risk to your business, because, of course, there's quite substantial punitive actions if you aren't disclosing this information. So that's going to be a big part of what we do, along with making sure that not only the large organisations across our industry, but the small to medium organisations are accessing critical information around what they need to do to change behaviours, or what kind of regulation is coming that could impact them, or how we as a service provider might be able to give them better access to recycling capabilities. I was at a BSR conference some time ago, and I had a retailer from Brisbane come to me after I presented on the topic of sustainability and around EPS. And she said, I have to drive 2.5 hours with a ute full of materials to find somewhere where I can recycle it. And so it takes me almost a day of driving 5 hours to and from this recycling facility just so I can do the right thing. Otherwise, I just don't know what to do. And those are the sorts of situations that we would love to be able to add value to, or by investing into certain waste providers, maybe they could take the mobility solutions they have to regional areas once a month and create a better infrastructure. And so that's a more all ships will rise approach that we want to take as well. And in fact, all board members, when they sign on to the constitution, sign on to recognize that it's an altruistic venture, that we're not here to benefit any one organization or any part of the industry. All resources and all ideas and all opportunity has to be shared equally back into the industry to make sure that we're able to maintain that diverse industry that we have today without negatively impacting it. So make sure it's very much an altruistic venture, not a commercial venture. But there's many other very, very talented leaders that sit within COFOS. And what I'm sharing with you is just one point of view, while others have really strong inputs and valuable viewpoints that I hope they'll get a chance to share those with you as well, James, because there's some really passionate people there doing some great work.
There sure are. And just before we close off the sustainability discussion, is there anything within the Electrolux sort of product portfolio that we'll see coming out that will hit some of those key messages? We've got the UC range. Can you just maybe give us a little bit of a preview of the UC range?
Yeah, I think we locally and globally are really focused on this. I think everyone has to be. We're always striving through our R&D and manufacturing to lower CO2, to create products that have material lower carbon footprints. And just in the last several months, Electrolux actually signed a 200 million euro loan with the European Investment Bank. And that is a loan that has to be invested into R&D on only energy efficient household appliances. So what I'm confident about is we're doubling down in this space, and we're going to see a lot more of it coming down the line. But in terms of our products, you mentioned, James, our Ultimate Care 3 range, which is laundry care product. And the energy ratings, the energy consumption, the water utilization, what we have is IntelliDose, which is a program that automates the dosage of detergents, which radically reduces the impact on clothes. And we have 3D Sense, which senses moisture in products to such a fine degree that it knows exactly when to turn on and turn off in terms of its drying mechanisms. And while that may not be unique technology globally, it's new to the market here in Australia through our products. So that's just one area. Our floor care products, what we're very focused on there, given these products tend to have a high propensity for disposal in non-optimal ways, is the recyclability of our product. And so right now we're using around 70% recycled product, and about 90% of our product can be recycled. So more and more we're trying to make sure that the products aren't just made with recycled materials, but then can go on to a second life in recyclability. And in our refrigeration range, we're bringing out a new 7-star product. In our laundry care range, we're bringing out some 10-star related product. Those are industry leading when it comes to energy consumption. So those things are all very much top of mind for us and will be a significant focus as we go into 2025 and 2026, continuing to drive a sort of sustainable product stewardship.
Kurt, Electrolux locally had its first conference in 7 years, just a couple of weeks ago. I think over 200 staff came together, which is a huge effort. Can you share a couple of the outcomes from that particular event? And yeah, how important it was to the local organisation.
Thanks, James. And for you personally, thanks for dropping by and spending a bit of time with us on the day. Look, for us, it was a really important event for a number of reasons. Seeing our teams together, and it was the first time in a while. We actually hadn't met at that scale since pre-COVID. It was a genuinely exciting atmosphere. And to see everyone positive about not only the business today, but the future of the organization was really powerful for me and for our leaders. It's clearly important that our retailers have the confidence that there is a united team. Electrolux has always had extremely good relationships with our retail partners, and we don't take that for granted. And I think having a team with a strong culture that focuses on customer service and doing everything we possibly can to create great experience for our customers remains at the heart of our business. Coming together to celebrate that and recognize that and reinforce that was always going to be really important. And we could have had two sort of key themes that came out of it. One was the theme of winning together. And I'll talk a little bit more about that, because we've had a tough 12 months that in many cases our retailers felt like they weren't really winning with Electrolux. And I'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. But the other theme was really around wanting to be the growth partner of choice for our retailers. And whether that is their ambition to go deeper into insights around the consumer or the category, whether that is the desire to create better experiences and in-store service for their customers, whether that is to partner with a supplier that is very focused on the sustainability agenda and understands how to help them steward that through their organization, or one that is just here to try and drive accretive value for the categories, we want them always to consider Electrolux as a first port of call. And so that was an important message that we wanted to bring on the day. The second message was just to acknowledge to our team the impact of our recent ERP or SAP implementation. And James, you and I have had plenty of conversations about this, many of them involving tears on my behalf. But roughly August of last year, we embarked on the biggest IT-related evolution that the business has seen in 12 years. And it was always going to be a complex exercise because we were well entrenched in a very bespoke system. And we had real experts on the ground in using that system. And we changed almost every touch point, every process. We changed multiple software platforms across our business, and it didn't go according to plan. What did go according to plan, and what I can always count on, is the incredible resilience of our team and the compassion that they brought and the friendship and the camaraderie that they brought. But why this hurt so much to our team and ultimately to our retailers is Electrolux, as I said before, has always had very strong partnerships. And those partnerships, those customer relationships, aren't a KPI for our team. They're held very close to their hearts, that this is a really important part of who we are as a business. Our personality, our identity as a business is so intertwined with the relationships we have with our customers. And when we went through this change, that was impacted. And when that was impacted, it really struck at the very core of our key values, which is about being very customer-centric and having those meaningful partnerships that we can walk into a store at any point in time and identify how we can add value, and we are treated with a great deal of respect and reverence at times from our customer base because we put so much effort into that. And this change put our team right in between our customers and a very tough place. And so that winning together felt like it had been fractured a little bit. And we're working extremely hard to fix that. But I took the opportunity at the conference, and James, we spoke about this afterwards, but I took that opportunity to apologize to my team. Ultimately, it's my responsibility that we brought this system to life, and that was on me, that things didn't land as they should have. And I apologize to my team. I asked them to pass on that apology to their families for the time it took them away from their families and for the challenges that they all faced together under really difficult circumstances. And I acknowledge the support, the friendship, the patience, and the partnership from our retailers who really extended themselves on many occasions to accommodate what was a particularly difficult period of time. And so while the conference wasn't meant to focus on a negative, what it was designed to do was recognize for our organization and accept why it hurt us so much as a business, and then to pivot and move forwards and recognize that the relationships are still there, the relationships are still intact. We can still be their growth partner of choice if we continue to focus on being fast, agile, sensitive to our customer and consumer needs. And if we win the hearts and minds of those customers through great insights, great customer service, value creation, we can get back to that winning together theme. And I think everyone walked away very energized, feeling the genuine intent of those messages. And that allowed us to roll into a full day of very exciting innovation over the next 2 years, of innovation across almost every brand and every category segment. We had Craig Wolford, economist, come in, who gave us again another fresh breath of air around the emerging market trends, which look very positive for the middle to back end of this year and beyond as interest rates start to soften and consumers get back to spending on household items. I think that the emerging positivity and trends just gave everyone a significant hop in their step, and we finished up the day on a real high with awards and recognition for a fantastic year. And in actual fact, last year was probably, I think, one of our top 3 years in the last decade for performance, both in revenue growth, profitability, market share. Despite those challenges, we still found a way to grow the business across all metrics. So it was worth celebrating, and certainly something we're going to do a lot more often, I think, given the response.
You come across as a very empathetic leader. You take the emotional component of leadership seriously. Do you find as though that is something that's important for an organization like Electrolux that would normally just be seen as a stack 'em high, watch it fly business that represents up to 4 out of 10 of the appliances sold in the Australian market?
Yeah. Oh, thank you, James. I have a very firm belief that I am not the MD. I am in servitude to the role. It is a figurehead that I need to do a certain job to deliver against. And I think with that responsibility comes an enormous amount of trust. And you really need to think very carefully about the people in your care. Simon Sinek always says it great. You're not in charge of those people. They are in your charge and you are there to take care of them. And we have a really wonderful group of people in the company that I have the great fortune of working for and working with. And coming into the business, what was clear is that there is an extremely well-founded culture where people do care. And it's been a challenging time. I've been with the business for 3 years. And while we want to nurture and maintain what is foundation to our culture, this sense of going over and above for your team, leaning in for your team, that concept of psychological safety, which you hear a lot of people talk about, but how do you actually create an environment in which people feel that they can be heard, can show up to the office every day and be themselves? And none of us are going to be free from the realities of our external environment. The world is changing dramatically every month, every week, every day, it seems. And we all have to be match fit and have the right personal grit and resolve to get through that. But inside our four walls, what we try to create is an environment where people feel able to voice their opinions, able to be creative, able to table their needs and know that those will be respected and accepted. And I think if we can get that environment working well, it just reinforces and strengthens what I think is Electrolux's superpower, which is these really endearing, genuine, strong relationships internally and externally with our stakeholders in growth, our retail partners, and with our consumers. It's very hard, I think, for many other companies to replicate that. So I have to recognize its importance and continue to drive it. And I think if you want to lead this organization and you do it without genuine sense of empathy, a willingness to understand, and a sense of vulnerability that you have to bring to the business and show that through the way you lead, it's not going to enhance this company's sort of superpower, if I could say it a different way. It's a very important part of what this company is about, and it takes a certain amount of awareness to recognize that and to make sure that you nurture it and see it successful. I really believe it's a winning part of the formula for success that we have and will have. And even though our business has been going through change, we have a deep reverence for the past and a respect for the past, but we know we have to embrace the future. What we're trying to do now, and the leadership team that I have, the great fortune of working with, is we're trying to build that next generation of culture and talent to take Electrolux through the next decade. And they'll be finishing the jobs we're starting, so we want to make sure we're all on the same page.
I'll just wrap up with the final question. Just any key messages to your retail partners? If I could assemble every retailer in the room with us right here, and if you could give them a parting message on behalf of the company, what would you like to tell them?
Yeah, I think thank you for the opportunity, James. And I do hope that most of our retail partners out there who I know would trust that we would have this conversation in person as well as in a group forum. But first and foremost, I'd reinforce our deep appreciation for the support they've given us through this challenging time on a personal level and on a business level. The second thing I would say is we need to keep our eye on the ball. The industry is being moved and shaped by a number of external forces. We currently have FX challenge. We may soon have tariff changes. We've got an election coming this year. We've got environmental regulation coming at us. And if we don't look at this individually, competitively, of course, but also collectively, we can get caught off guard really quickly. And what we don't want to do is see our industry rapidly devalued. What we don't want to see is our industry regulated to a point where we see a loss of good competition or we see a loss of diversity. And those are things I think collectively we want to find a way to come together to tackle as we move forward. And I think those things for me are going to be key, along with how we drive efficiency for our industry. There's potentially a lot of opportunity for us to work our resources harder and manage our efficiencies better. We spend a lot of money on trade spending and we move a lot of very expensive boxes around the country. And I think on both sides, collectively, we can extract value that can be invested back into our brands, our consumers, our customers, and into the initiatives that we want to bring to life as an industry to make us a more sustainable one. I think there's a lot of excess wealth that is not being tapped into and might not be being pointed in the right direction, which collectively we can have a look at. How are we spending those billions of dollars of discounts, and are they really generating the right value? And through our collective and combined capabilities in forecasting in partnership, how could we create more efficient back-end supply chain to make sure we've got the right product in the right place at the right time and not having to cross-dock product all around the country and move it at last minute, which does no one much in the way of good. So I would say that those are really important things. A very big thank you for their understanding of the challenges we've gone through, and trust us and stay with us. We're pretty much through it. Over the next several weeks, we're going to emerge. And in doing so, we're going to have a great team with an incredible slate of innovation coming down the pipeline for them to grow their business and to attract new users and create healthier categories. Let's keep an eye on the ball collectively around what are these big moving beasts coming at us as an industry. And then finally, I would say let's just make sure that we are continuously assessing ourselves collectively, individually, for productivity opportunities so that we can free up investments into those things that we know will actually grow categories, grow consumer conversion, and potentially protect our industry and our environment from more negative impacts that can come from poor management of our industry. So those would be the things, I think, James. I appreciate the opportunity to table a few of those.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Kurt. That's tremendous insights into not only the Electrolux business, but global sustainability initiatives, local sustainability initiatives, COFOS, and obviously a very honest explanation around what happened with the ERP SAP integration last year. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for being descriptive and providing us with insight into what for most retailers is the most significant major appliance business that they work with on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you, James. I really appreciate the opportunity as always. I look forward to catching up again soon. And thank you, Seamus. Great to meet you.
Yeah, you too. Look, I don't think we could have asked for a better way to kick off 2025 here on the Appliance Retailer Podcast. So yeah, thanks so much for joining us. And of course, we've got the big sustainability report coming up, James. People should be keeping an eye out for that.
Absolutely. That sustainability report will be published in the April, May edition, and these podcasts will be part of that report.
It's fantastic. And of course, you'll be able to join us for more from the Appliance Retailer Podcast real soon.